Chapter 97. No, no, apostrophe said Dennis, there'll be no murdering, my pets. Nothing of that sort. Quite the contrary. Apostrophe, you are an older man than your companion, sir, apostrophe said Emma, trembling. Have you no pity for us? Do you not consider that we are women? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I do indeed, my dear, apostrophe retorted Dennis. It would be very hard not to, with two such specimens afore my eyes. Ha ha! Oh yes, I consider that. We all consider that, miss. Apostrophe, he shook his head waggishly, leered at Hugh again, and laughed very much, as if he had said a noble thing, and rather thought he was coming out. There'll be no murdering, my dear. Not a bit on it. I tell you what though, brother, apostrophe said Dennis, cocking his hat for the convenience of scratching his head, and looking gravely at Hugh, it's worthy of notice, as a proof of the amazing equalness and dignity of our law, that it don't make no distinction between men and women. I've heard the judge say, sometimes, to a highwayman or housebreaker as had tied the lady's neck, and heels you'll excuse me making mention of it, my darlings and put him in a cellar, that he showed no consideration to women. Now, I say that their judge didn't know his business, brother, and that if I had been that their highwayman or housebreaker, I should have made answer. What are you a-talking of, my lord? I showed the women as much consideration as the law does, and what more would you have me do? If he was to count up in the newspapers the number of females as have been worked off in this here city alone, in the last 10 year, apostrophe said Mr. Dennis thoughtfully, you'd be surprised at the total, quite amazed, you would. There's a dignified and equal thing, a beautiful thing, but we've no security for its lasting. Now that they've begun to favor these here papists, I shouldn't wonder if they went and altered even that, one of these days. Upon my soul, I shouldn't. Apostrophe, the subject, perhaps from being of too exclusive and professional a nature, failed to interest you as much as his friend had anticipated. But he had no time to pursue it, for at this crisis Mr. Tappert had entered precipitately, at sight of whom Dolly uttered a scream of joy, and fairly threw herself into his arms. I knew it, I was sure of it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Dolly. My dear father's at the door. Thank God, thank God. Bless you, Sim. Heaven bless you for this. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Simon Tappertit, who had at first implicitly believed that the locksmith's daughter, unable any longer to suppress her secret passion for himself, was about to give it full vent in its intensity, and to declare that she was his forever, looked extremely foolish when she said these words, the more so, as they were received by Hugh and Dennis with a loud laugh, which made her draw back, and regard him with a fixed and earnest look. Miss Airedale, apostrophe said Sim, after a very awkward silence, I hope you're as comfortable as circumstances will permit of. Dolly Varden, my darling, my own, my lovely one, I hope you're pretty comfortable likewise. Apostrophe, poor little Dolly. She saw how it was, hid her face in her hands, and sobbed more bitterly than ever. You meet in me, Miss Five. Apostrophe said Simon, laying his hand upon his breast, not a prentice, not a workman, not a slave, not the victim of your father's tyrannical behavior, but the leader of a great people, the captain of a noble band, in which these gentlemen are, as I may say, corporals and sergeants. You behold in me, not a private individual, but a public character. Not a mender of locks, but a healer of the wounds of his unhappy country. Dolly V. Sweet Dolly 5. For how many years have I looked forward to this present meeting? For how many years has it been my intention to exalt and ennoble you? I redeem it. Behold in me, your husband. Yes, beautiful Dolly Charmer and Slaveress Tappert, it is all your own. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as he said these words he advanced towards her. Dolly retreated till she could go no farther, and then sank down upon the floor. Thinking it very possible that this might be maiden modesty, Simon essayed to raise her, on which Dolly, goaded to desperation, wound her hands in his hair, and crying out amidst her tears, that he was a dreadful little wretch, and always had been, shook, and pulled, and beat him, until he was fain to call for help, most lustily. Hugh had never admired her half, so much as at that moment. "She's in an excited state tonight," apostrophe said Simon, as he smoothed his rumpled feathers, "and don't know when she's well off. Let her be by herself till tomorrow, and that'll bring her down a little. Carry her into the next house." Hugh had her in his arms directly. It might be that Mr. Tappertit's heart was really softened by her distress, or it might be that he felt it in some degree indecorous, that his intended bride should be struggling in the grasp of another man. He commanded him, on second thoughts, to put her down again, and looked moodily on as she flew to Miss Haredale's side, and clinging to her dress, hid her flushed face in its folds. "They shall remain here together till tomorrow," said Simon, who had now quite recovered his dignity till tomorrow. "Come away." Cried Hugh. "Come away, Captain. Ha ha ha. What are you laughing at?" Demanded Simon sternly. "Nothing, Captain, nothing," Hugh rejoined. And as he spoke, and clapped his hand upon the shoulder of the little man, he laughed again, for some unknown reason, with tenfold violence. Mr. Tappertit surveyed him from head to foot with lofty scorn. This only made him laugh the more, and turning to the prisoners, said, "You'll take notice, ladies, that this place is well watched on every side, and that the least noise is certain to be attended with unpleasant consequences. You will hear both of you more of our intentions tomorrow. In the meantime, don't show yourselves at the window, or appeal to any of the people you may see pass it. For if you do, it'll be known directly that you come from a Catholic house, and all the exertions our men can make may not be able to save your lives." With this last caution, which was true enough, he turned to the door, followed by Hugh and Dennis. They paused for a moment, going out, to look at them clasped in each other's arms, and then left the cottage, fastening the door, and setting a good watch upon it, and indeed all round the house. "I say," growled Dennis, as they walked away in company, "that's a dainty pair. Muster Gashford's one is as handsome as the other, eh?"
"Hush!"
Said Hugh, hastily. "Don't you mention names. It's a bad habit." "I wouldn't like to be him, then,
as you don't like names,
when he breaks it out to her, that's all," said Dennis. "She's one of them fine, black-eyed, proud gals, as I wouldn't trust at such times with a knife too near 'em. I've seen some of that sort, afore now. I recollect one that was worked off, many year ago, and there was a gentleman in that case too that says to me, with her lip a-trembling, but her hand as steady as ever I see one, 'Dennis, I'm near my end, but if I had a dagger in these fingers, and he was within my reach, I'd strike him dead afore me.' Ah, she did, and she'd have done it too."
"Strike who dead?"
Demanded Hugh. "How should I know, brother?" Answered Dennis. "She never said. Not she." Hugh looked, for a moment, as though he would have made some further inquiry into this incoherent recollection. But Simon Tappertit, who had been meditating deeply, gave his thoughts a new direction. "Hugh," said Sim, "you have done well today. You shall be rewarded. So have you, Dennis. There's no young woman you want to carry off, is there?"
"And no," returned that gentleman, stroking his grizzly beard, which was some 2 inches long.
"None in particular, I think." "Very good," said Sim. "Then we'll find some other way of making it up to you. As to you, old boy," he turned to Hugh, "you shall have mixed her
that I promised you, you know, within 3 days.
Mind. I pass my word for it.
Apostrophe, you thanked him heartily, and as he did so, his laughing fit returned with such violence that he was obliged to hold his side with one hand, and to lean with the other on the shoulder of his small captain, without whose support he would certainly have rolled upon the ground. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.